Welcome to the Skype for Business Subject Matter Expert, or SME, Roundtable. I'm Sherry Bettina, and I'll be your host. We are the IT Showcase team, and we love to talk to you, our customers, about how Microsoft does IT. I'm here today with our Skype for Business experts that run the Skype for Business technology here at Microsoft. This is your opportunity to ask direct questions of our SMEs and receive candid answers. You can now start submitting your questions through the live Q&A window, and I also have collected up some questions submitted in advance, so I have those at hand too. We will make every effort in the next hour to get through all of your questions. However, if we aren't able to, we'll stay behind in the studio and continue filming the answers to your questions, and then post that with the video onto our Microsoft.com/IT Showcase site. With the extended footage. So we'll get started by asking our experts to introduce themselves. So Donna, let's start with you.
Hello, Donna Patterson. I'm the Engineering Program Manager for Skype for Business Client, IM Presence, and Federation.
Hello, I'm Kevin Fanton, a service engineer in the voice, video, and conferencing space.
David Leff, I'm a network architect in the Enterprise Infrastructure Services team.
Hello, I'm Dan Babb. I'm a Skype for Business service engineer in the telemetry space.
Hi, I'm Dwight Jones. I am a service manager with Skype for Business for Microsoft IT.
Hi, I'm Shin Kudaira. I'm the service engineer for voice, video, and conferencing, mainly focusing on the PSTN integrations.
Okay, well, let's get started. Be submitting your questions, and I'll pull from the ones submitted in advance first. So first one to you, Donna. What are the differences with Skype for Business across the multiple mobile platforms?
Well, Skype for Business is now offered across Android, iOS, and of course, obviously, we've launched with Windows, and we also have some which is for the iPad. You have a lot of rich feature parity that goes across as far as your contacts, advancing, and saving, and obviously the full meeting content and sharing. However, most recently we've been working on our iOS platforms. We now allowed you to add your contacts and favorites or into your current groups that you may have. Future down the road, we will be looking at group management by the end of this quarter. We also have Android returning to that with the ability to do contact work and forwarding in the future, and then Windows has a full array. When it comes to your mobile client, the biggest thing is you want to make sure that whatever app or whatever software solution that you have that is right size for viewing capability.
Okay, great. Thank you. We'll go next to Dan. What data will I be able to see for my users if my company moves to Skype for Business Online compared to on-prem?
There is a difference in how your deployments are done depending on if you have a fully on-prem environment and you're already looking at your data, or if you have a hybrid environment and you're already partially in the cloud. So with the data you have accessible on-prem, you're already able to see certain aspects of the call quality and the reliability that you have. If you move to the cloud, we're in the middle of working out data gaps that we have that allow you to see all the same telemetry that you would see on-prem. So for example, when you go to look at your reliability in the cloud, you will only be able to see the audio portion of your reliability versus seeing the audio and the video portion that you have now on-prem.
But that's coming.
But we're working through it.
Yes, those are all features that are in a pipeline due to hit over the next year.
Are there any additional things you can see online from on-prem?
No, the most feature-rich amount of data you would have would be from your on-prem environment.
Okay, we're still fleshing out that.
Yes, your on-prem environment allows you to actually store and manipulate your data however you see fit. You can use the canned reporting that comes with it or build your own custom solution around it. In the cloud, your data is hosted in the cloud, and so having access to it is a little different.
Thank you. Dwight, What are your learnings from working with a hybrid server environment? And first, maybe you can explain what our hybrid server environment looks like.
Absolutely. So when you think of Skype for Business, you have the on-prem instance, and you could also be, and with the E5 offering, have the dedicated cloud offering where all of your phone and conferencing services are in the cloud or are happening in the cloud. At Microsoft, we run in a hybrid environment where our voice traffic we have users that are both in the on-prem instance and about 50,000 now that are in the cloud, but we route for the majority of those users the voice traffic through the on-prem your voice services versus totally on in the cloud. But we do lever the conferencing service completely in the cloud. And to speak to your question, the significant benefit what we're seeing is that IT now becomes a customer of the cloud, where we had to be challenged with making sure that we were purchasing the hardware in our data centers and had the servers and working with all the different disparate teams and needing, to your point, all of the telemetry, Dan. Now that we IT managers can become a customer of the cloud, we can transfer some of those needs because it's all happening behind the scenes because Microsoft becomes a customer of the cloud.
So you don't need all the data necessarily?
Well, you need portions of it, and we're negotiating that, what the telemetry there is. But, you know, from a traditional IT perspective where you're housing and owning the server operations, that is now handled in the cloud. So the impact from change and from things becoming unhealthy, you have the SLAs with your cloud provider versus having to be responsible and accountable for all of that in your on-prem environment, and that's largely the difference.
So we don't have to worry about the nuts and bolts of running the server and the...
You become a customer, which is really good from an IT management perspective.
I like to actually, in addition to that, and mm-hmm. when working with the client, understanding that when you're on-prem versus in the cloud, there may be different features that are available to you, mm-hmm. and knowing your end user and what tenant or what environment they're in, you may have different best tips and tricks or best practices that you want to communicate and share and get out there before your users on how what feature is available to them versus what feature is not. And then if that feature is in the cloud, how is it different from what you're having and managing on-premise?
And do we also sometimes plan who we roll into the cloud based on what feature set they need?
Yes, you can. And if you think of one like those who are field sellers and out selling the product, you want them to be on your latest and greatest. You want them to enable more features for them to be able to experience it so they can sell it the best.
Okay, that sounds good. We'll go next to David. David, do we use proxy servers on our network edges?
Generally, no. So we have had proxy servers in our environment in the past. Typically, our internet egress today on our edge is either to all of the internet or to Microsoft-specific services like Skype for Business involves a firewall that just simply lets the traffic pass through. We do network address translation, but we don't actually intercept that connection and then make a new connection outbound. That can cause problems with security contexts and some of the connection security that services like Skype for Business use. So no, we do not use proxies on our edge. There are a lot of customers that do, and for services on the internet like Skype for Business, what they recommend to do is actually use a proxy auto config file or something similar to make sure that traffic destined for that service does not actually go through the proxy service itself. Basically, you create a local address table that says, do not take the proxy server, take another path to the end service.
A traffic router.
It's traffic engineering. Not really routing, but mm-hmm. you know, normally take this edge, but to this particular destination, take this edge instead.
Okay. For you were saying for security reasons, or
connection security, it proxying and actually intercepting that connection and making a new connection outbound can create issues for connection-based security.
Okay. Great. Is it very effective for us?
utilizing the firewall edge rather than a proxy edge? Yes. So it does all the things that we need it to do. We get the visibility to the traffic that is actually leaving our network. We get the ability to block inbound connections when they're unsolicited. So if there's not a corresponding outbound connection, we don't want to just let people come into our network, for example. So we get all the functionality that we need out of a kind of a traditional firewall solution rather than an actual proxy implementation.
Okay, great. Question. How are you handling E911 location mapping on such a large campus? Who's the best?
You want to? I can take that on, right? You know, E911. That's one of the that's one of the key pivotal points that is available in the cloud as well as on-prem. You know, Skype for Business is fully set, and I know that our on-prem environment is set. And I may not be the right one to speak, so Shan, you can jump in and help a little bit here. For E91 traffic, we're using the building and locations of each users. We're using multiple databases across Microsoft to understand where our users are to make sure that we are E91 compliant. I know that with the O365 admin tools, it is built on all of the compliance that is required for E91 in terms of address validations and things of that nature. So that is built into the administrative functions of Skype for Business.
And also what we do on campus for the E911 is basically we do have a dedicated E911 server, and we route all the traffic for the outbound to the 911 calls through that dedicated servers. Now, some of the sites outside, it could be a case by case because it's different among countries. Some of the sites, we have a dedicated analog line that is specific to the connecting to the E911, to the emergency numbers. So whenever there's an outbound call, we have a routing set up within our Skype for Business environment to route those to the specific dedicated lines or the trunks.
Shin, also another twist to add to that. We inform people, we still do have PBXs in our environment. We haven't gone totally away from that. And I think that always comes up with a question when we're asked. We're not. We still have PBX, traditional legacy, in our environment.
We do have PBX left in our environment, but basically it's mainly for the sites where they still need the function in the PBX that is not available on Skype for Business. For example, like the call center functions or the telesales team. But majority of the sites that doesn't require that or can be handled within Skype for Business, we have taken those PBXs out already.
Great, thank you.
And here's an extension of that question. How is E911 handled in Skype for Business on-premises wireless environment? Does wireless make a difference?
To my knowledge, no. For whether you're a wireless or wired client, it's still the same deployment for us.
Because the thing is about being able to find the individual if there's an emergency, and if you're wireless, you could be roaming around the building. So is it able to locate you?
As long as the access points are in that database correction, the 911 server, they would have to be entered in there. So this way, like you're saying, a user within that vicinity of that access point on that floor would be on that type of a subnet, and it would register with that E911 gateway.
Yes. There are investments that we're making in location services for wireless infrastructure in all of our facilities, yes.
Okay, great. Next question. Is the Skype for Business client available and supported in Zen and Horizon VDI environments? Is that something we're familiar with?
That's not how we are using it here inside of Microsoft. And largely what we're going to be able to express is how Microsoft uses it today. And we are not leveraging that. There may be some product development that's happening, but we are representing Microsoft IT and the 220,000 Microsofties that are using it, Skype for Business in the on-prem and cloud environment across the world.
Okay, great.
But we can take that offline and follow up.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
For sites that are Skype for Business online only, do you use internet connectivity or MPLS with quality of service to ExpressRoute?
I can take that one. Mm-hmm. So we do have field sites or tail sites that right now, essentially, we call them kind of an internet connected only site, where we don't actually bring CorpNet to them. We just simply bring them to the internet, and if they need to get back to our corporate network, they can remote access in. At those remote sites right now, today, we just simply let the traffic go to the internet. In the future, we're actually going to expand the internet connected site model. So as we, you know, live the company strategy of cloud first, mobile first, most of our productivity services are going to the internet, and even line of business services as well. So that internet connected model will start to push its way inward, right, from the small tail site upstream to larger tail sites and hub sites and even large campuses. Today, most of that connectivity, we believe, will stay on the internet. At some point, we will start investing in a more comprehensive ExpressRoute infrastructure. We will bring traffic from a tail site up to an ExpressRoute, what we call an ExpressRoute on-ramp in a hub site. And from there on, we will take ExpressRoute to services like Skype for Business. So there will be a kind of a service placement and a new virtual topology that we put on top of our existing logical and physical topology that is built, purpose-built for specific services. So the paths that we're taking to services like Skype for Business today are going to continue to change over time, and we won't have a pure model where it will be all internet or all express route. We'll have a combination of those based upon where the people exist versus where the service point of presence is and what the actual network topology underneath it looks like. So I probably didn't give a completely definitive answer. And
but it's changing.
It is changing and molding
to what you need.
And it will continue to change. Right. So this is an ongoing thing where we have to continue to watch, you know, where are our people versus where are the service points of presence and what is the infrastructure, in the available infrastructure topology and capacity look like.
Next question. There's a lot of questions. Is there a white paper that details out the feature and function parity between the different clients?
Actually, there is not a white paper, but we can get access to that after it and share what we have for the different mobile clients and what they have. Not something we would kind of list out, but there is no white paper, but we can pull that together and send that to the team.
But is there product information out there?
Yes, there's product information probably out in TechNet and our product marketing team. We have that for what, if you're on, in the productivity guides, we can share those as we always do. But I think they're wanting just the matrix with the different platforms and then what features are rolled out and what is not. Yeah. Like, for example, we've had iOS, we've just done app viewing. Now we're going to look at audio-less content viewing, so you can be in an IM and you can actually share your screen. So it's still growing, still continually to evolve, but we can give them where we're at a point in time.
Okay, and they can probably, our productivity guides are on our showcase at Microsoft.com/IT showcase.
Yes, and they're current.
Yes, so you can find that information there.
And they also can search, like Donna said, TechNet and on Skype for Business and get some of that information as well.
Great. What reporting will we be able to get once our Skype is completely hosted in the cloud?
I can take that. The type of reporting you'll get is you'll gain access to the call quality dashboard that the PG has created. So as you log into your multi-tenant or your tenant environment, you're able to see your environment and get a summary page of how your wired performance is going, how your wireless performance is. You can look at certain chipsets inside of your wireless. You can look at a daily view, a day of week view. There's a lot of different things you can configure from that summary page, and then you're able to actually go and pivot on specific things that you might be interested in, like how is the performance for a certain client version doing or a certain headset, things like that.
And you can get the detail like packet loss, jitter, stuff like that.
Yes, you can look at all of the dimensions that make up what would signify a poor call.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. With Skype Online getting features that are on par with on-premises, what would you say are the deciding factors between choosing on-premises, hybrid, or cloud-only deployments?
You know, I would consider what we're doing with the E5 launch and the tremendous opportunity that Skype for Business has now, not only to be a unified communications platform, but also that carrier platform. And when you're looking at Microsoft and the cloud services that we offer and being able to lead in that space and set that global presence and offsetting the carrier costs. And you know, Microsoft is working with governments and working with carriers across the world to be able to deliver this global service at a minimal cost to IT companies. So the savings of what you will have from that will be a significant benefit to businesses. You know, also, as I spoke about earlier, being able to transfer the overhead and the responsibility of having to work in companies in a kind of a mixed mode environment when you have shared infrastructure where you're able to transfer some of that. So it's a significant benefit from that perspective as well. And you know, there's still a lot of lessons learned, a lot of improvements that we're making as Microsoft to get there. We use it every day, and we're going to scale 90% of our users to the cloud environment by the end of FY17. That is the current plan, and we use it and leverage it every day to be productive and collaborative across our hybrid environment. So it is the future, and it will work great for companies that are looking to leverage it going forward.
I want to add a spin to that. Also, understand when working with the customer base, if you are a customer or if you are in the state of Las Vegas and you're one of the casinos, they have a law that says that their data cannot leave the state. And so cloud technology is different for them. Mm-hmm. So it's, if you're a mining company and if most of your people are doing work 100 miles below, 1,000 miles below, the surface of feet is below the surface. It's what is appropriate for your service and for your company and how they do business. And knowing how that company does business, knowing what their needs and demands are of the business may, and the laws may shift to you to be mm-hmm. on-prem, hybrid, or in the cloud totally. Mm-hmm. And knowing that is much more impactful than the benefits of just saying, oh, take me to the cloud.
Look at the legal aspects countrywide too, right? Because mm-hmm. India, you have to keep it local.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I've been hearing a lot of buzz around Project. Will this replace Link Room systems?
No. Rigel is not going to replace Link Room systems or Surface Hubs. Rigel aims to improve and also bring the Skype for Business meeting experience to rooms that don't have the latest equipment. Rigel was built to bring the Skype for Business meeting experience to rooms that have standard projectors and monitors. So that being said, Rigel was built on the Surface Hub platform, so it's pioneered on that platform. And it's a center of room device for on Windows 10. And so we can get a lot of video experience into more video controls into that experience with the center of room touch control on the Surface devices.
Okay, great.
But it's not meant to replace it.
It's additive.
It's additive, correct.
Yeah. Another tool.
It's another tool. It's a cost-effective.
Yeah.
It's cost-effective, and if you say, well, I can't really put a Surface Hub in there, it just costs too much, you can get that same type of experience with a Rigel system if you just have a projector. You still get your IM, your messaging. You can still even do, you know, whiteboarding, but it's at the device level. With the Surface Hub and the LRS systems, you have the touch displays, but with that comes cost. Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to do is get that Skype meeting experience into every conference room, independent of what type of equipment you have in there. As long as you have a projector and monitor, you can get that experience.
Okay, great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. This next one. We are looking to use Skype for Business along with Acano as our AV solution. One topic that seems to be debated often within our project team is the flexibility to edit the Skype meeting invitation. Will it be possible in the near future to edit the invitation to our liking? For example, put the phone dial in information at the top of the invitation. I'm not sure if we can answer that because we don't always know what's coming. But
right. We've made changes when we were going. I remember Scott did it when we were doing migrations into the cloud or online. We did make adjustments into our into how we had it. You know, say it's the online meeting or whatever. I think that's something done with the admin and done at the enterprise level, the IT admin.
But you believe
that.
It's capable.
It's capable.
We've done it.
We've had some issues with the link room, Skype room meetings systems, mm-hmm. where users were taking the information, copying and pasting it mm-hmm. from previous meetings. But the way the system is designed is it looks at the subject line in there, and if you modify that, what was happening is users were getting in the Skype meeting rooms and they were seeing no meeting on the display. And there's a warning that says, "Where's my meeting?" What had happened was it was just not updating. So there's ways around that, but yes, we're working on being able to modify that, but currently we don't have some.
And that's the name of the invite, which is different than the text within the invitation.
Yeah.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
So we've modified the text within the invitation,
right.
But there's still some kinks.
There's
that we're
still
working
some
through.
Kinks in, yep. in that, mm-hmm. correct.
Okay. Great.
And I think another one is for the, one of the pieces of education and communication. In the Skype meetings, or if you open up a new meeting invite and do meeting options, you want to always use a unique ID. You don't want to use the same one. So if you have one meeting running over and one meeting right behind that, they don't join it. So those some of those communication best tips and tricks you want to be aware of
those
so that you don't run
settings.
Into those. Yes,
yeah.
Settings that alert or inform your end user.
I've had that experience, back-to-back half-hour meetings and people showing up early.
But that also goes into some feature parity, right, where we are working through a challenge in the online environment versus on-prem, where you can have the private meeting settings where it will create those unique meetings so people won't jump on the same call and things of that nature. So, you know, that there is some work to make sure those IDs are unique, but even to the question, you know, there are some modifications that you can make to the URL in the meeting invite. And but I wouldn't want to suggest that we can answer those questions specifically in this form. Right?
Okay, thank you all. Next question. Do you allow the Skype for Business mobile client to access calendar data via Exchange Web Services? If so, how do you keep users from downloading company email to personal workstations?
Well, what we normally do is when we, in the world of BYOD, you have to identify how you're going to manage an individual end user using their personal device, but also sign into your corporate net environment. So for us, we have conditional access. We have ADAO, we have two-factor authorization, where in order to sign in, we do have that kind of partition where you can access on CorpNet, and here's what you do. We have enterprise data protection set up where we can make sure that you can, if you download it, you have to log in and do the two-factor auth and do that. And I think that's a communication that you make, or decision that you make at the deployment stage, and then how you manage that will be the security feature, whether it's Intune, ADAO, two-factor auth, and managing that. But if you do not want your employees using their personal devices to get access to certain things, that you can manage that control at the enterprise level. And I've had that. Now, some options are, hey, we take over your phone, but most people don't want to log in on that.
We manage it.
We manage it for you, and most people are saying, no, this is my personal device. Or they have to do a two-factor auth, and they're limited to where and what they can go and do unless they're securely signing in.
But you I guess, and Donna, you can correct me, but for us, and we use our personal phones, you know, we use our Outlook calendars on our phones, and we get the meeting invites in our phones, and we can click on that, and that launches the Skype for Business client, and we can join directly from our personal phones to that. And also, we do have individuals that use their personal computers to log in to Skype for Business sessions. I know that may not be the same for every company, but you know, as Donna mentioned, we're more of a BYOD operation here.
But we, even on our personal phones, mm-hmm. and on our personal laptops, we mm-hmm. keep business email separate
yep.
from personal email.
From personal.
So yep. we're never blending the two.
No, you're yep. not blending, and you're yep. actually trusting certificates and all that when you log in the first time. So mm-hmm. there is a big piece of security where you, mm-hmm. it's partitioned. You just don't know it's partitioned because yeah. it's your personal phone.
The biggest addition has been that two-factor auth.
Two-factor auth,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Six-digit PIN.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds worse than it is. I mean, I was scared of it in the beginning that it would be a hassle, but mm-hmm. it's not that big.
I use all my
You get used to it.
You get used
yeah,
to it.
Yeah, it's just a new piece of technology you adopt and use.
Yeah.
Next question. How much of your population is on corporate Wi-Fi versus wired? Any tips from rolling out a large Wi-Fi infrastructure?
I can take that question. So when we review our telemetry, we are always looking at who's on wireless, who's on wired. So here at Microsoft, we have about 60 to 70% of our conference calls exist on wireless opposed to wired. So what we do notice is that despite everybody being here at the company, we have a lot of people who work remotely. And mm-hmm. so when we look at our telemetry, we parse it by not only looking at who's on wired or who's on wireless, but we also look at who is internal here on campus and who is external at their home office or in a hotel or traveling. And so we see about 70% of our volume gets generated from people that are outside of our corporate network, and they are generally on wireless. And so the way your performance is dictated is you're going over either a public network, you're connecting on the type of radio technology you're on, whether you're on 802.11n or 802.11ac, are you on 5 gigahertz, are you on 2.4 gigahertz? The telemetry we gather lets you see all of that data and lets you see where your best data points are.
And there's initiatives, right, to start yeah. using more wireless.
Definitely.
Within yeah. our conference space, though, which I work in, is we still have dedicated Ethernet drops into those spaces. Just because of the amount of people in the room that may be using wireless, we always want to have a great meeting experience on the high-speed Ethernet-attached device, but we are migrating more to wireless infrastructure and less wired, even in the office spaces.
Yes.
David, we do
have an initiative called Wireless First. To move the client devices, the personal and professional client devices, to wireless connectivity in favor of that over wired. So wired utilization has been on the decline for the past couple of years. People have already, you know, voted with their device choices they've made. Gentleman is correct that, you know, 70% of the connectivity we see when people are on premises is actually on wireless. In a lot of this, the information worker-oriented sites, it's less than 10% of the connectivity is actually wired.
Mm-hmm. So, and when we do a new building, are we only doing wireless?
We will be, well, not only wireless. So wireless first does not mean wireless only.
Okay.
So we will have shared infrastructure, things like conference rooms and touchdown spots and common areas will have wired infrastructure, but people's offices will be wireless only, essentially.
And as the technology has changed from the BG, and then we were rolling out the N, and now with the AC, that's where we're starting to see more of that because of the higher bandwidth and higher reliability.
Yeah. Multiple radios.
Multiple radios.
So not everybody, typically on wireless, people are fighting for the airwaves.
Channel.
Right.
Yeah.
So now we have multiple radios, we have multiple streams being processed simultaneously, higher capacities, greater AP density.
Yeah.
There's a lot of investments we're making in wireless infrastructure to make the general experience more robust. But then
and
also
equivalent.
Equivalent or better
okay.
than wired eventually is the goal that we want to achieve. It's pretty good now with 802.11ac. So to be able to get to wireless first in a site, rolling out wireless 802.11ac is actually a prerequisite. So
to add on to that, though, we've seen, looking at the telemetry, we analyze all of our buildings every week. We look at the top talkers and the worst talkers for our environment, and we found that with the new deployments that David's talked about, we see performance from new wireless buildings with populations there performing almost or better than wired. So the technology's come a long way, and the performance on Skype for Business reflects that.
Yes.
As judged by the quality of the call?
As judged by the quality of the call, looking at the QoE data that Skype generates.
Some of the issues would be around maybe wireless drivers on the device that may be negatively impacting.
Your wireless drivers will be your biggest driver on where you have quality or not.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. So it's not like coverage, David, or anything like that. It's more on the device.
It's both.
Both?
I would think it's both.
Yeah. But I think the broader point is that there's a huge paradigm shift, right, where initially, we were suggesting for everyone to plug in. That's not the case anymore with BYOD and folks having multiple devices. So what became the choke point was the wireless infrastructure, and we've done a lot of great work to make sure that we are planning our wireless infrastructure for the future demands of our Wi-Fi infrastructure, and that should be brought into your design thoughts as companies and businesses are scaling out Skype for Business.
And like Dan said, to the home user on Wi-Fi seems to be another big challenge, right? Because
yep.
usually it's only one device, it's at the opposite end of the house, the range is really not there, and it may just be just an old device.
And sitting on top of a microwave.
Well,
exactly.
To speak to that, I mean, it goes back to the lessons we learned over the last couple of years. I mean,
yeah.
if you looked at wireless performance here at Microsoft about 2 years ago, we were 8-9% quality. 8 or 9% of your calls would be poor over wireless, and today we're under 2%.
Right.
And it goes all to the types of investments we've made in wireless. It goes to cleaning up our environment and how we look at drivers and what we mandate as a preferred driver and the driver that you drive to make sure your entire environment's on. So home users are no different. I mean, 2.4 gigahertz is still a good radio frequency to be on in your home because of the penetration it has across
greater range.
Depending on how your home's laid out, if you're upstairs, downstairs, one end of the house, the other, but getting the right AP density in your house can be important in affect how you operate on Skype for Business inside of your home. So those are things that home users will start to have to look at.
Absolutely. That's a great point.
We should move to the next question. Have you performed full-scale location mapping or relying on users to specify their location manually?
I can take that. We maintain a database that all the internal IP blocks that we manage are routed to a building logical mapping. So if you're in building A over in some place on a different campus, we have subnets assigned to that, and then we have a database that gets updated every day that we integrate into our Skype for Business data. And if you're on the cloud, you have access to CQD, so the call quality dashboard. It has an option for you to create a flat file of your mappings for your environment, and you can upload it. And once you do that, you can start pivoting your data on how your buildings look or however you've laid that out, whether it's buildings, floors, conference rooms, whatever, however your IP scheme works.
And even to the AP level, right? So
yes.
You'll know how folks are performing to
yes.
a specific AP access point.
Great, thank you. What has adoption been like for cloud PBX thus far? have customers made steps to remove their on-prem Link Skype implementations in favor of Cloud Connector and Cloud PBX?
I mean, from a customer perspective, we know that Microsoft is supporting and we're scaling and we're rolling with the E5, a number of customers that are doing a pure cloud implementation. And depending on the needs of your company, it is fitting them well. From our perspective, I know we migrated, and Donna, you can help me, was it like 15,000 users to the pure cloud offering?
Yes.
So we have that, and they're still functioning in our environment today. The broader needs of the business for Microsoft is we're going to continue to scale the hybrid scenario and working through, you know, multiple national corporations for that to do that broadly globally, and then we're going to convert as a company to the full cloud environment. But we do leverage that in our environment, and we are supporting a growing number of customers today. I don't have those numbers because they're supported out of our product group in that cloud offering, where IT doesn't support those customers in-house.
Okay, thank you. It was mentioned that many users are both in the cloud and on-prem. How is that configured? How are voice features on-prem separated from conferencing in the cloud?
Okay, as I mentioned earlier, the conferences that take place for our cloud users that are formed in the cloud are maintained there. And the connectivity between our on-prem instance and our cloud instance is is similar to a federation where, we work across both environments. And if you're not familiar with a federation, we're federated with over 17,000 companies. And so the cloud and on-prem instance works similar to a federation.
Okay, cool. I want to ask if you have deployed Enterprise Voice to users in India and what challenges you've had.
Part of it, yes. Mm-hmm. We are in progress of deploying Enterprise Voice in India today. We are expected to complete that later this fiscal year. Yes, there has been many challenges on that. We went in two phases. First was what we call EV Lite, mm-hmm. where it was replacing basically the traditional PBX that were used for internal voice over IP calls. Now we're in a final phase of Enterprise Voice EV4, which is somehow, coming more similar to all the enterprise voice deployments we have at the rest of the world. But still, even with that, we do have a lot of limitations or the regulations from the country. So we have been working very closely with the product group to make sure that the deployment that we have implemented is following and not violating any of the local country regulations.
Yep.
And the challenges have been the regulations.
It's the regulatory challenges. Mm-hmm. We have to be complicit of the government regulations.
So. And they're probably a tougher environment, the rules.
We've had to work with them, right? To, this whole concept of enterprise voice or IP routed telephony is new to a lot of regions, right? And so it is. Working with and just
they have to get
sure.
familiar with our technology.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And we have to work within the confines of their government, right?
So we did have to build some of the servers in country, and we could not use the server pools in Singapore where all the other Asian countries do today. So we have a dedicated pool in India, and also some of the limitation on user side is that even if they have enterprise voice, once they leave the office, they cannot, it is not allowed to connect to any PSTN calls and those kind of limitations.
From their home.
Yes.
They don't want like toll bypass, calls originate in the country instead of outside the country, right?
Okay,
yep.
Thank you. Next question, is SDN in use with your network controllers and front ends on the corporate net?
I can start out with that one. So software-defined networking means different things to different people. And there's a lot of different facets to it. We do use traditional quality service on the wired network. We do traffic engineering and what people may think of as software-defined WAN on our edges. So we can send things down. For example, when we talked about earlier, do I send something down an internet path versus an express route path? In our wireless infrastructure, are the vendors that we choose for our wireless access points and controllers have been working with us and the Skype team to leverage Skype-specific SDN features to actually give better quality of service and the right type of functionality to the clients themselves as well. So the answer is yes, in several different fashions. Skype is a great, and voice and video are a great canary for service challenges and service issues. And it is probably the most sensitive thing on our network right now in terms of some of the things we talked about, latency, jitter, loss. So we are making great investments in software-defined technology to adapt the network and tune the network so that that experience is better on a second-to-second, minute-to-minute basis.
So to add on to that, as David pointed out, the networking team and the internal Skype for Business team, our data sets are used and looked at daily by both teams constantly because the data set inside of Skype for Business is so rich that it is, like you said, it's a canary in the coal mine. When you see things starting to pop up for poor calls, it's very sensitive to the way the network performs. So they use both as a tool to diagnose where they're having problems.
Voice and video is big. Lots of bandwidth.
It can be.
Mm-hmm. It depends.
It depends, but also, you know, it's big. It's big not only in that fashion, but it's big because it's critical to us being able to do business, right? The rich collaboration helps us get our jobs done and deal with our customers and what have you.
Good. Thanks.
Yeah, I think I would come back and say that it's not lots of bandwidth. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to do it from our homes. But it is real-time communications, and we just need to, yep, to make sure it's prioritized right and with the software design, networking, and that's built into the client and the things that David mentioned. It's all about making sure that the performance is there from end to end. So,
okay, thank you guys. Next question, do you know of any updates to the resource kit tools for Skype for Business, like the ABS, Config, DBA, Analyze, et cetera?
Mm. I think that's one we probably need to take offline, yeah, and work with the product group and see what's offered in the software development kits.
So we speak from an IT perspective in what, yeah, we use, so we aren't always able to answer,
right,
every question.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do any of the Microsoft employees use Skype for Business on a virtual desktop, thin client endpoint? If so, can you provide some additional information on how Microsoft IT has implemented it?
I think that's a PG one as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's
a PG, well, yeah.
We don't have thin clients
we
in our environment.
Yeah. No.
But I'm sure that we may have them out there.
We have loaded a full Office suite, yeah, including the Skype for Business client on Azure Remote App, for example, mm-hmm, which is essentially a remote desktop session host in Azure, mm-hmm, and people get access to those applications in kind of a virtual Chromeless window on theirs, but the, mm-hmm, application's actually running remotely.
Yep.
It did work, mm-hmm, and had decent quality.
Yeah.
So it's possible to do. There's no technical restriction that would prevent you,
yeah,
from doing that.
Yeah.
If you have
there's nothing to prohibit you that, yeah, I'm aware of.
If you have the proper device redirection, yeah, and you have a client that supports, yeah, that, it will work.
Yeah.
I don't think we have any standards and conventions, yeah, around it yet.
No.
And as you, if you do use it, you can always look at the data and see the performance for yourself,
yes, yep,
inside of your own data set.
Correct.
Good point.
Okay. Can you share any information about multi-region Office 365? Will Skype users be able to connect to their nearest data center with conference cascading occurring in the background? We don't always know what we can do.
Conference cascading, that's a new term for me. But in terms of multi-regional, we are working past the multinational corporation now, and by the end of this fiscal year, we are looking to scale beyond, in the cloud beyond Microsoft US beyond North America. We're scaling to EMEA first, so I'm hoping that that provides some clarity there, but we're breaking that US limitation and through the multinational corporation.
Right, because currently it's all US based. Right. Right now there's nothing outside of that region, so.
Yeah, but that's coming very soon.
Okay. How do you provide branch survivability to your Skype for Business online enabled use sites? Is the lack of this feature currently slowing down your site adoption?
Branch survivability, that seems like a availability scenario that would be the
or access from a client device to the end service. You know, we do have a gradations and types of service levels and the investments we make for resiliency and availability in these different sites. For the most part, internet connectivity and even dedicated corporate connectivity in our sites is pretty reliable.
Yep.
But you know, there are times when the network just does go down. Yeah. Generally, you know, I think, again, we have those gradations where we have sites that are internet connected only, sites that are corporate only, sites that are standard, sites that we actually do make the investment in local redundancy. So we have redundancy of equipment, we also have redundancy of circuits, and sometimes even carriers.
Right.
It just depends on the site.
Yeah. There's no survivable branch appliances or anything like that.
Well, I think to the point that we do standard network engineering, we don't do anything, any special sauce particularly.
We build based upon what the business needs in the site,
yeah.
Right? So they tell us what their minimum performance and minimum availability needs are,
yeah.
And we build to that or higher, depending upon the investments we make. The one thing that I will say, though, is internet didn't used to be a business-critical service.
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely is now.
Yeah, and that may be an extra circuit into the site if the business requires it.
Correct.
And also for the SBA, the appliances that come with certain media gateways, we have been testing that early in the days, but you know, with working together with a network team, in Microsoft today, we do not deploy any of the SBAs that come with media gateways. So we rely on the network redundancy of that part.
Okay, thank you. We are now getting very close to the end of our hour, and I would like to ask our SMEs one final question. You've been working with Skype for Business for a while now. What is the one tip you would like to leave our customers with today from this session? Now, while the SMEs are thinking about the answer to their questions, I would like to say we would love to get your feedback. So please, if you will, take a moment and answer a couple of questions for us so that we can find out how these sessions are doing for you. With that, we'll go back to Shin.
Okay.
To start off the last question.
Mm-hmm. From my side, I have been working with a migration of the legacy TDM PBXs to Enterprise Voice in a lot of regions, across multiple regions. And it has been really a challenge for me, especially during, you know, five years ago. But even though you're not planning for a retirement of your traditional PBX at the moment, when you do deploy Skype for Business Enterprise Voice into a legacy PBX site, design as much as you can to look, you know, much in the future of the time when you are ready to retire your TDM PBX, because I have been having challenges, especially at the beginning, where we added the Enterprise Voice gateways into the site, but still depended on PBX. And that turned out to be a very much of a very complex steps when that site was ready to decommission, take out the legacy PBX and have 100% on Enterprise Voice. So even if you're not planning to decommission your legacy PBX, I would recommend that you kind of make the most, you know, don't be dependent on your legacy system as much as possible when you make a big change in your environment.
Clean transition and decom quickly. For me, my one thing would be, or my biggest lesson learned is to make sure that you include all of the critical stakeholders when you are planning your Skype for Business deployment. That is your support teams, the networking team, your client and conferencing support teams, if they are different, because it is an end-to-end technology, and you need to plan end-to-end, and you need to make sure that all the stakeholders are brought on board for the entire project, as well as your telecom team. So.
For me, I would say the biggest advice I can give would be that the data that you have available in today's culture of data-driven decisions will help you decide how and when to make infrastructure decisions or what type of devices to buy for your network. There is no limit to the amount of data you can get from Skype and how you can use it in all facets of the business. So that's my advice.
Thanks. From my perspective, I think realizing that the end-to-end dependencies in terms of what gives you good call quality or a good user experience is longer than we originally realized. So we jokingly refer to to layer 8 as anything between the speaker's mouth and the listener's ear. And you know, we made assumptions and jumped to conclusions that it's got to be a Skype service problem or it's got to be a networking problem when, you know, we already mentioned that the client devices, the network interface cards, the drivers, even the quality of the microphone and the speaker that you're using makes a huge difference. So we spent a lot of time, I think, you know, again, making assumptions about what the problem was and investigating things that turned out not to be the issue. You can deal with that proactively by giving them good guidance on what we know what does work properly, and then using that telemetry and the data to actually investigate when you can eliminate the known goods and bads.
The one tip I would say is over-communicate to your end users regarding changes inside these meeting spaces now in these conference rooms. The technology is changing so rapidly that we're, in our environment, we're constantly putting new equipment in, taking equipment out. Make sure, you know, your users are well-versed on any changes that you may have placed in there, how to use the equipment. We're talking like signage. We also put, like, when they're booking these meeting rooms, there's like a mail tip that comes back. It says, do you want to make this like a Skype meeting? And then there's other embedded links within there to help pages if they run into issues in the room, how to connect devices, how to make your meeting room experience better. You know, like Dan was saying, the drivers, check those, and how to connect. But over-communicate that. And we put signage in the room on the walls and, like I said, within the emails too.
For me, when you're thinking about doing a deployment, you want to identify what's in or out of scope. For example, is BYOD and other devices going to be a part of your scope? Then also understand or make the decision what features are going to be managed at the enterprise level or configurable at the end user level. That makes a difference. And when you're having that deployment discussion, make sure you have a focus group that's going to give you a feedback that's outside of your developers, that's outside of your IT team, that common end user, that when you launch something and roll it out in the space, they can give you real-time feedback and say, this is the experience I got from this feature, or this is how it's being perceived when it's in use. Those are critical things that you want to make decisions up front and throughout the process, have that continuous feedback loop to make sure that you're putting a deployment out there for your employees that is viable and that they're going to use. Nothing will help you to do a Skype deployment and then nobody's using those features. It hasn't been adopted because it's not ease of use. Real critical.
Okay. Great. We are at the top of our hour. I do want to thank our SMEs for taking time away from your day job to come here and talk to our customers. And I do want to thank you, our customers, for joining us today. We truly love the questions and the dialogue and the opportunity to come talk to you. We do have more questions that we will be addressing after we shut down this call. So please look for those in a couple of weeks on our site at microsoft.com/IT Showcase. We have regular webinars and these SME roundtables, and we would love for you to join us on those. find the schedule on the IT Showcase site, as well as productivity guides, technical case studies, and a wealth of information on how Microsoft IT uses Microsoft technology to run this global enterprise organization. So thank you for joining us today, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Hi, we're back in the studio with the rest of the questions. There are some questions that don't really apply to what Microsoft IT does, so we'll be skipping those particular questions. But for the ones that we do have answers, we'll take those on. First question, how do you provide redundancy for Skype online users? Does each tenant have a cluster type scenario, or is it based on more groups of tenants?
Well, for, you know, we're leveraging the cloud for the availability and reliability from a capacity perspective. We do have, redundant routing to the cloud environment. As for the server implementation, we do have full redundancy at the user pool level, and they are constantly testing disaster recovery scenarios in that environment to make sure that we have the amount of capacity to support entire pool failures and things of that nature. So it's built into the design of our cloud implementation.
Okay, thank you. Has adoption become an operation component, or is transition a one-time activity in moving to Skype for Business?
No, I think adoption is definitely operational. Yes, in we moved last year from Link 2013 to Skype for Business, but that was the big client push. And then as we roll out new features or enable it for different mobility clients and also Skype for Business for the Mac, that is an adoption experience that we want to land well, we want to communicate, we want to give highlights and features, knowledge and education. So no, it is clearly operational as a part of Microsoft work.
And also, we have basically a readiness and adoption program that's called Skype at Microsoft, right? And it's all about ensuring that we have the information out there for users to adopt the platform and have the information they need to make their experiences better.
I'd like to add to that as well, going back to a comment David made earlier. Skype for Business is extremely complex, and so any updates that happen, they're no longer that traditional IT approach of we're going to make this big upgrade and we're going to cut over to this new system and then we're all on the new system and it functions much like that one-time event. It's very operational. It's constantly being updated, so you're always going to be moving forward, adding new pieces of features and parity that comes along with the environment.
Okay, very good. Next question. With your Skype broadcast, how are you able to switch among multiple cameras and views for your broadcast? This is something we'd like to do as well. I'll take that on. We have a fabulous team of video audio specialists here with three cameras, and they're live switching through a TriCaster, I believe that's true. Okay.
All using Skype meeting broadcast, right? Which
yes.
Rolls with
Yes,
but, so you too can do this.
Yes, but there is equipment that is certified for use with Skype that is available to our customers, Roundtable, Surface Hubs, Polycom equipment, various things that people do use for real-time conferencing that does have functionality in it that will identify who's actually speaking and kind of center the
speaker.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it highlights them in the Skype call.
When we don't have the fabulous team behind us doing all the magic, there is technology in each conference room that is automated that will do it for you.
Yep, we can scale.
Okay, great. I'm not finding good documentation on removing hybrid to go 100% Skype in the cloud. Is there a white paper available? Great question.
Yeah, I think we're still building that story. We have written white papers, and I know David, you and I collaborated on one talking about the migration to the cloud story, and it's available on TechNet, IT Showcase, but it spoke more specific to the hybrid scenario. We will be building a cloud-centric story and more white papers coming forward. So well, we're building that story as we speak now, so we will write about it as we take in our lessons learned from that.
There will be a white paper that we'll work on.
Yes.
But we have to complete the story.
Yes, we're
all
living
right.
It.
That sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
How much infrastructure responsibility is there after cloud migration? You can take that.
I'll start it off and we can pick it up, right? So when we are transferring our reliance on Microsoft IT management data centers to the Azure cloud, that has lessened our dependency on those internal resources. We still have reliance on network, obviously at the access level layer, and also ensuring that we're routing at the edge appropriately.
Yeah, so some of the fundamental things that we used to do around data center hosting, capacity management, the servers, the storage, that sort of thing has moved off to the cloud provider.
Yeah.
But the access layer, like you were saying there, the network to actually get from here to there,
mm-hmm.
the service management components, the customer relationship, we still own that.
Yeah.
One thing to add to that, on the PSTN integration piece, on-prem hybrid doesn't really make a difference because all the voice calls to PSTN still goes through our SBCs or the media gateways. But once we're in the cloud PBX, that portion essentially goes away. It's all in the cloud. Well, which means at the same time we lose controlling those the media gateways or the SBCs, but that portion really reduces.
Mm. Okay. So some things will still remain on the cloud, but
yeah.
On-prem, but mostly you get rid of your...
Yeah, I actually just recently did a presentation where we are looking at our M&R savings from, and it speaks more to moving from traditional PBX to enterprise voice, and we need to upgrade it to even tell the story for the cloud. But we are calculating that we save approximately $130,000 a day in M&R. So
M&R is
maintenance and repair
okay.
costs. I'm sorry, that's a month. Monthly M&R costs by using Skype for Business versus the legacy platforms that were there.
We're fairly large enterprise.
We're fairly so. Large enterprise, but being able to quantify that story is huge for us.
Yeah,
yeah
that's
yeah.
great. What are you using for monitoring call flow and quality analysis?
I can take that. We mainly use Call Quality Dashboard. It's a product that was built into the Azure cloud for you to monitor your quality, and it follows the CQM, the call quality methodology flowchart on how calls are generated and how they route through your internal infrastructure into the cloud.
Okay. Does Microsoft consider to have own voice gateway instead of to certify third-party voice gateway device?
Well, for the voice gateways today, we already use the third-party devices.
Okay.
So, yeah, even not just the voice gateways, but the session border controllers, the mm-hmm. SBCs, we are using a third-party today.
Have we considered using our own?
Not at the moment, no.
Okay. Not something that...
And we are also looking into other manufacturer options as well. We're not limiting to one third-party. You know, we want to kind of balance out and see what works best for us. And it could change among the where you put them. Like some, one region might be using one manufacturer while the other might be using another. So mm-hmm. we're not limiting, but we're kind of trying to be flexible around that.
Okay. Great. Can you tell us whether Microsoft provides a specific user's high-level call detail records available only to themselves for review at a later date? If so, any insight if that is something that will be made available to customers going forward?
I'm trying to think. What I think they're talking about is in our My Setup, when you look at the 24-hour history of your call, and you it has latency and lag time, and you can see who was on your call, what device they called in, whether it was a poor call or not, whether they were contributing to that. And that is an in-house built option. And I know that there's talk with Premier to try to build that for some customers. But I would suggest they go through the TAM and Premier support for that.
I can add on to that. So the application Donna's talking about is done from using the QoE and the CDR data that we have that comes with any Skype deployment. So the call detail records are the CDR data, and that's where you can find the information she's referring to, along with looking at different pieces of the quality aspect.
Okay, great. Does Microsoft IT use location-based routing for enterprise voice in countries with strict telco regulations?
We do use a location-based routing for India, yes. But for the other, it's just for India within Microsoft today.
Okay, but if another country had very strict rules?
If they had, if we had to, yes, we will be.
Do you utilize Intune and Outlook Mobile with MAM for your mobile users? If so, how did the migration to Intune Outlook go for users?
We did. There were some users, and a lot of them, I say primarily on the Android devices, that were pushed back. But when we use Intune and all that for our mobile clients for iOS and obviously the Windows phones, was fairly smooth. But I know some of the Android users wanted to keep theirs separate. And the six factor off, just like we talked about adoption of any features or whatever, we had a communication plan, we had a program, we rolled it out, we educated our end users, and we told them when the cutover date was. And there was not that much, but that one specific platform, they did not, a lot of them that were personal BYOD users did not want to embrace it.
Yeah, one clarification. The six pin off, not six factor off.
I'm sorry, right? Six pin off. Yeah. That'd be a lot of
only two factor, but yeah.
Two factor off, but six digit pins. Thank
yeah.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Six factor off would be bad.
Yeah. That would be a nightmare.
That would be bad, yes.
All right, thank you guys. How do you prepare / minimize issues with external participants that can't join a meeting because Skype web app is missing or won't install?
That's not a volume scenario for us. That's not something that comes up largely for our own experiences. I'm sure it happens out there, and I'm sure it would have to be handled by a case-by-case basis, depending on that local client configuration, et cetera, et cetera. So without more context, I couldn't answer that.
Yeah. And also, I would think the hardest part would be to call in with no ability to view content, and that is not always the best optimal solution. If they have a BYOD program and they can call in on there and get the BYOD from the Skype for mobile client, that may be the best alternative versus the web.
Yeah, and I want to take it on maybe a little bit more, because what we have is, we have our integrated support systems that if any user calls, our help desk is ramped up on solving most login or those type of issues in a fairly quick, they really beat their SLAs for that. So usually those type of issues are isolated to that specific user, and it's probably more of a tier one help desk scenario.
And don't we also have the option to call in on the phone number if we're
yes.
having any issues at all? So yep. we can still join the call. We may not be able to view content.
Right.
Or
just right.
the audio.
Content.
Yeah, this is yes. the audio only. That's right. what
yeah.
I'm saying.
Yeah, at a minimum, you should always call back in to at least hear the call. And,
yeah.
And then other solutions exist for solving why you can't install that web app. It's pretty seamless.
Whenever we bring up a site to Enterprise Voice, we always have one number from that DID range of that site to be built as a conference dial-in number. So every single site, every single office that we have would have at least one conferencing mm-hmm. dial-in number.
Mm-hmm. And I've had to use that number. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Next question. Do you support normalization rules to support local dialing partners for each Microsoft site, What level of dialing patterns do you support? E.164 only, national dialing patterns, local PRI dialing patterns, short code dialing?
Basically, when we create a dial plan on enterprise, when enabling a site with enterprise voice, we have to create a dial plan site per site. And basically, when we create that, we follow whatever they have been used to when they were using the traditional PBX. So for example, if they had a 4-digit short number for their help desk dialing, we would try to make that into our Skype for Business dial plan. And those kind of short-digit dialing, it's not consistent across all the sites. Mm-hmm. Some sites might use 5,000, some sites might use 2,000, some sites use like even 5 digits, 65,000. So it's very, you know, unique to per site. So we do have to end up creating dial plan for every single site. Mm.
Okay, good deal. For the Skype for Business client updates, version 2013, are they all cumulative or only the ones that specifically say cumulative?
All of our build updates are cumulative, and if there's any that we do special, would be more for a security feature, but no, they are cumulative. Let me think, having the previous build security and features in.
Okay. And we have a great last question. Specifically, what are you most excited about for Skype for Business next year?
Well, I can start and you guys can jump in, because I'm super excited with what is being offered now that Skype for Business is a part of the E5 offering, and we are now not only being seen, and I spoke about it earlier, as a unified communications platform, but we're providing those local carrier services. And what that means not only for internal Microsoft, but what that will mean for businesses out there that leverage this. I'm excited that we're moving to the cloud as a corporation, and that we're getting past the multinational corporation. So we're going to be scaling the cloud globally, and the footprint and that Skype for Business will be making into the environment, and helping and working with carriers, working with governments to make the service and the platform broadly available across the world. So I'm super excited about that.
As for me, from the client perspective, I'm super excited that we will be, we've actually dog-fooded, and we have our TAP and our preview community looking at Skype for Business for the Mac client. And I think once that goes global availability or global goes live, we will be, Skype for Business will be agnostic to whatever device you have. And we roll that over all platforms. So I'm excited about that from a client perspective, and the features and the richness is coming out of that. From a Skype for Business for that end user day-to-day work, I'm really liking that I Am in Presence has continued to evolve and update offline messaging that we're coming out with. So if I am Dan and Dan doesn't respond, it will say, Dan's not available, try again later. And Dan will not only get a message in his conversation history saying he missed one, but I'm getting real-time feedback to tell me, okay, his presence might stay green, but he might not be right in front of his computer or his device. So I'm really excited about the things we're doing with communicating to that end user to give them a much more richer and informed experience.
Okay. I got one. I'm really excited about the fact that we're rolling out the integrated room systems with Skype into our conference rooms. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have the classic problem here at Microsoft that a meeting starts at 9 a.m., and you spend the first 5-10 minutes getting all your client PCs set up, and everybody connects to the call, and getting the AV and, you know, video up and running. Mm-hmm. Where now, you know, a lot of the modern rooms that we have in there have the little panel, have a Surface Hub, have a link room system that you just walk in, your meeting is on the schedule, you press the button, and everything magically happens.
It knows. You invited the room.
You invited the room. Yeah. So all that, you know, lost productivity and hassle, you know, moving cables around.
Mm-hmm. I love
thing
it.
Of the past.
Yep. And even bringing in the Skype meeting experience into just standard space VTC rooms that have Cisco or Polycom, we're also doing that. We're partnering with Polycom, and we're extending that into the O365 space as well too. So there's some hosting on the Microsoft Cloud to get that BTCs into the Skype meeting rooms, which will enable, you know, content sharing, which we didn't have before.
Okay.
I'd like to chime in. Some of the things I'm excited about are in the data area. As we have gone through this journey of moving our customers, or not only our customers, but ourselves from our on-prem environment to the cloud, we've been able to understand that there are much more data insights you could gather from our cube that exists and our SQL database behind that. And so unearthing those new features and adding them into the data telemetry to where you can get even a better understanding of your devices or how a performance is happening over a certain microphone or looking at an audio experience or understanding your video experience. All those new features and gaps, we've had a great partnership with the PG in providing that feedback and allowing them to build those areas into the telemetry where you have a gap. All of our customers will be able to benefit from that since they can get that stuff right at the tip of their fingers without having to create some custom in-house solution that they do today due to having an on-prem environment.
I would want to point out about migrating into the cloud PBX or Skype for Business. One of the challenges that we are going to face is, as I mentioned in the previous questions, that, you know, particularly on like SBCs or the media gateways where we still have control today when it's on-prem or hybrid, when it goes into the cloud, we kind of lose that functionality or the freedom to kind of do a tweaking on the routing at that level. So I'm looking forward to how we can still feedback that to our product group so that, you know, not just Microsoft, but all the customers that will be starting to use the cloud PBX solution, even though it's going to be less operational, we still have the ability to control our routing in and out of our environment.
Okay, fabulous. Thank you guys for staying longer. Mm-hmm. This concludes our extended footage. Thank you, customers, for submitting your questions.